Ladies and gentlemen, dear guests, participants, good morning. I would like to thank everyone for coming here this morning. This discussion is part of a larger campaign that we have been conducting for the last 6 months, and we are the organizers from Bulgaria. But this campaign has a European dimension. It is supported financially by the European Commission, and it is implemented in 4 countries: Bulgaria, Estonia, Portugal, and Malta. And we have representatives of all 4 countries here in this hall this morning, for which I'm very grateful to everyone who joined this meeting. We have had a series of discussions already. Actually, this is the last national roundtable in Malta. That we already had 3 in the other 3 countries, and everywhere there is a different topic of the discussion which is aligned to the specific national characteristics of agriculture in the country. But during this campaign, we actually discovered that the 4 countries have a lot in common in terms of agriculture. And even though they are more or less, if you look at the map, in the 4 corners of Europe, and even though sometimes the problems are exactly the opposite, for instance, we know that in Malta there is too little rain, in Estonia there is too much of it, but this creates basically, in terms of agricultural policy, the same sort of issue to be solved. This is what we're going to discuss today. What is the right balance in a common policy for the whole of Europe between common rules, common things, and national specifics? Because the next programming period will be there for all of us, for everyone engaged in agriculture for the next, 7 years. We need to be prepared for what's coming. It is my pleasure to now pass the floor to the representation of the European Commission in Malta for a short speech, and then we will proceed with our first session for today. Dr. Zara from the Ministry for Resources and Rural Affairs is our first speaker. Mr. Naudi will moderate all 3 discussions today, and we will probably have guests after the coffee break, but that will be announced later. Thank you for your attention, Mr. Bugatti. No.
Bugatti.
Bugatti. Bugatti, I like, you know.
Bugatti is a car.
Yeah, I know.
So good morning. Thank you for that introduction. Good morning. I see a lot of ex-colleagues, ex-friends, ex-student fellows of mine. So I know most everybody from the from the national scene, but there's a lot of other people as well. So good morning, everybody. I would like to talk a little bit about the actual celebration of these 50 years and try to put it in the perspective of national or local or regional difficulties, because the aim of having a celebration of the 50 years of CAP is an information aim. And I would say that of all the European policies, the most maligned over these past years has been the CAP. It has been subject to so much flak, so much attacks on the basis of its success, most of all, that very often it's considered to be the black sheep of the European funding system, of the European structure itself. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is this attack justifiable? Do we need a cap before we continue on this line? Why is there a cap in the first place? If we go back to the very beginnings, CAP was born in a period of hunger and post-war disaster. So it was structured in a certain style which aimed to promote European, I won't say European agriculture or to help farmers, I would say it was to promote food production. It was the first tool against the poverty and hunger that was striking Europe at the time. Fortunately, and unfortunately, it became the victim of its own success, because by the end 70s, early 80s, we already had skeptics and enemies of this sort of policy attacking the overproduction that had become the that epitomized CAP. So that's the first stage in the public perception development of the policy dealing with agriculture. There was a first significant reform over 10 years ago. It was implemented in 2003, if I'm correct, right? Mm-hmm. Where CAP moved away from direct subsidies. It moved away from increasing production and started introducing other elements. And it started introducing elements that are of more interest to the consumer, to the general population, to the eventual 500 million clients of CAP. More, actually, because we also deal outside of our borders, but let's stick to our citizens first. It started addressing more the concerns and needs of our consumers from an environmental point of view, from a food safety point of view, from an animal welfare point of view, because these were concerns that were cropping up in surveys and opinion polls of European citizens. We did not want any more to eat food that was coming from animals that were treated badly. We did not want any more to live in an environment where excessive use of pesticides and fertilizers could be of detriment to our natural environment and eventually to our health. And certain scares and certain scandals that we had in that period, I remember the dioxin scares in food, made it, the BSC crisis, yes, made it crucial that these concerns started to be reflected in CAP. And the policies started to change to adapt to this. On the international front, world trade pressures meant that CAP had to open up further. Our policies had to stop relying on internal subsidy, barrier protection, and export subsidies, and go more and more for a quality control, for a quality product that was much more in demand and meeting the requirements that we ourselves, as customers, had put on the table. But this was not enough for those attacking CAP, because 10 years later, we still get articles about the lakes of milk and the mountains of butter, which is so old hat. That was the first success. Our CAP now is talking more about how to produce better food, how to produce food better. Better food, better produced. And how to keep on satisfying the quantitative needs at the same time. But the perception is still there. And since I've been involved, I was involved in agriculture for a certain amount of my years of life, and I've always found that lack of proper information, lack of communication, results in the creation of a vacuum that gives space for misinformation. When the right information is not advertised enough, is not communicated enough, the chances are that someone else will say something not based on the realities, not based on the facts, and it will take ground. I use the metaphor of a field. There are many farmers here. If the field is not tilled and farmed and sown with the right seeds, you'll get weeds growing. And it's the same in the information sector. Unless you sow the right information and communicate CAP properly, it will be the wrong facts that will thrive and will create these negative perceptions, which we have. And that is why I come to the national front. It is very important that we discuss very strongly the difficulties that national agricultures face, because one of these very common misperceptions is that farmers have an easy life. How many times have we heard that who the biggest farmer in the United Kingdom is? that it's a member of the royal family. How many times have we heard that? That is the only fact that seems to interest people who want to make a show with what they're saying. But then you mentioned Estonia, you mentioned Malta. If you just look around our landscape, you see those tiny little plots of land being worked very hard and in a very difficult way. That is who CAP should be addressing. And CAP is also moving now, has moved and is continuing to move. And I think it's in the interest of small countries to continue to push for it to move more towards Pillar 2, where instead of direct payments linked to production, in a country of small production like Malta and other areas and regions where the production is small, the production-linked payments are not substantial. They don't mean anything. But Pillar 2, the general principle is that it always moves on towards a project-based financing. And the projects are assessed not only in terms of more efficient production, but they take on board all the other criteria that are of so much interest to our market. CAP also has to compete with imports. And when I say imports, I mean third country imports, imports from outside the European Union. And that is, I think, another area where there's a major deficiency in the communication of CAP. If we are striving to make our agricultural production so much better, if we are working so hard on our quality, but then we do not apply the same standards to imported materials because we do not have the means to control how the product is produced outside of our borders, if we're facing a situation where the imported product can compete so strongly on the price coefficient, it's a logical following that we need to advertise CAP per se, CAP in itself, CAP in its own right, about how the products of CAP, European agricultural production, is better. We have many types of quality production. We have organic production. We have many areas of quality, many types of quality marking. We have the control of the DGI control, the PDOs, the names of products coming from particular regions, that you buy a cheese from this area, that's a specific area. The sum total of all these little policies, of all these little quality value-added policies, is what has to make CAP move forward. The environment is not anymore price. The environment is not anymore quantity. Our production, our agricultural production, and I talk about European agricultural production, but I also talk in a microcosmic way about Maltese agricultural production and this environment, because what applies between Europe and the rest of the world then applies between Malta and the rest of Europe and between Bulgaria and the rest of Europe. The quality production, the short distances that our products have to travel, makes them better. And I think that's the key word. CAP is ultimately just better. There's no other word. I can't think. I try to change words to avoid becoming monotonous, but I can't think of a better word than better. So that's the situation. Seasonality is also very important. And my final message, I don't want to speak for too long because I can ramble on for hours on this thing. But I have to underline the point that the policy, European policy in agriculture, needs to be given its recognition as being successful. European policies in peace have finally been recognized. It had been ignored for over 60 years plus. The role that the European Union has taken in peace has finally been recognized. I think that the role that CAP has taken in the building of Europe also needs to be recognized and needs to be supported and informed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're right. So, do I have to press something for this? Okay.
I suppose so.
Yeah. No. Am I heard? Yeah. Okay, great. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank Dr. Pugelli for coming home again.
Not a doctor.
Yeah. And for delivering this very heartfelt introduction. as well explained by the organizers, the theme of this conference is about linking the different aspects of CAP. And the first speaker today is the Director of Agriculture. Agriculture is a directorate within the Ministry of Resources and Rural Affairs. And I give the floor to Dr. Justin Zara. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Naudi. And I would also like to thank the organizers for having brought us this opportunity, which I have to also remark, one does not come across every day of talking about the balance between the commonality and the specificity of the CAP, because most of the time we are logged about discussing what most of the CAP should look like. But I think that is an obvious imperative in the circumstances that we are all living in. And I would also like to thank my friend and colleague Ambassador Bugelli for having gone through many of what I and I think everyone who is today at the heart of the discussions on the Common Agricultural Policy see as the real challenges that are facing us. I have prepared, of course, my speech for the benefit of the multinational audience that the organizers have brought us today in a manner that describes a little and explains the specificities that Maltese agriculture faces and how we, as an administration and as a collection of stakeholders in the agricultural sector, look at this this link, let's say, between the commonality and the specificities of the Common Agricultural Policy. But it would be amiss of me if I did not, in a manner, react a little to some of the main themes that the ambassador has said. Mainly because we are talking about what the CAP is going towards. He described very adeptly and I think very accurately the importance that this policy has had in bringing cheap, high-quality food to European tables over the past 50 years. And it is also true that in doing so, it has increasingly carried out an agenda that goes politically even beyond, because we have managed to integrate from the first six countries, member states, that formed the European Union. We are today 27. It was necessary to incorporate the agricultural policies of all those who came on board as one went along. It's no easy task, and I think that the CAP today represents the best possible compromise in those circumstances and during that period that could be achieved. What is happening now and what the challenge is for decision makers in Europe today and over the next months is to take the CAP to the next step. And I think that one of the salient points of the next step in terms of overall strategy is to have better public goods for the CAP and to make a real differentiation throughout the community of which sectors can continue to be price competitive, which farmers will continue to need strong elements of direct support to carry out that activity, and which sectors will need to continue improving the added value, let's say, and the differentiation of their products in terms of freshness, in terms of locality, in terms of its link with territories and the communities that it serves, in a manner where you can get a better premium price for what you are producing. The institutional framework for this is, of course, more complex in terms of the Lisbon Treaty and how the European Parliament now has a major role in, for the first time, in a reform of this agricultural policy. I think that, if I may be so bold as to use the word democratization of the CAP, I will perhaps use it, because in following the debate in Parliament and the contribution that the MEPs have been making to this debate, I think one of the factors that is emerging most clearly is that there is perhaps an even closer understanding to the very different needs of specific stakeholder groups in specific areas of the community as regards the needs. And I think that they're not doing a bad job of looking at the common element of the CAP either. There is a gargantuan task for them, because they are have to go through, I think, more than 1,800 amendments before there is a first opinion of the European Parliament on the cap reform. But I think that one can really look forward to a decision-making process that will take us beyond the strictures of talking about the specificities and the number of, let's say, more tailor-made arrangements that have to be made in certain areas, which has traditionally been governed by looking rigidly at what is in the treaties and having heads of government trying to, or rather heads of agricultural ministries, trying to find compromises among themselves, to a process where there are also going to be the directly elected representatives of those groups having their own say. I think that this process will probably, hopefully, bring some more depth to that process. And I think that it is also bound to take us on the right track towards having a better fit of the cap everywhere. I would also like to expand a little on what does unite us in terms of these countries. We have, in spite of the differences in the overall makeup of the countries, I know, for example, that in Bulgaria there is a very large expanse of small farmers. And when I say small farmers, of course, we're talking about farmers who are running family businesses. And perhaps increasingly the difference between the instruments that we adopt is beginning to differentiate, and the Commission proposes also do this, between larger companies which are able to farm and produce food on a certain scale and families who really have their own, their family's livelihood, which is attached to this activity. But I digress somewhat, so perhaps I will also now switch to talking a bit about how Malta looks at the challenges that agriculture is facing and how the Common Agricultural Policy fits into this. I'll first talk a little about the inherent difficulties, the geophysical and structural difficulties that face Maltese agriculture. The ambassador in his introductory speech talked about the very small parcel sizes. Yes, that is the main characteristic that today farmers have to contend with. There is a very high fragmentation of parcels. I presented to you the main figures. You're talking about almost 13,000 holdings which are spread over an even smaller number of hectares, which of course means that the average parcel size is smaller than 1 hectare. I think that the picture also illustrates another difficulty that is faced by many islands in the Mediterranean, particularly so in Malta, which is the terracing of fields, which of course presents quite a bit of difficulty in terms of the accessibility that farmers, and especially when you are trying to use more automation, you face in gaining efficiencies. I also have to explain perhaps that in many cases farmers not only have very small parcel sizes, but they also tend to have a high number of them spread around the island geographically, which of course increases certain costs, such as, for example, fuel, which is the basic thing to get around and make your deliveries. And everyone knows that with today's high energy costs, this is not something to be taken lightly. The structure, of course, also presents a bit of a problem in terms of soil erosion. And I think that this is quite easy to understand, because we have a situation where increasingly, and I have to say perhaps with a bit of sadness, especially so since I started as director a little over a year ago, we have had an increase in very intense flash floods, which get a lot of precipitation concentrated into a very short time period, and which has the effect, unfortunately, of carrying away a lot of the basic matter which farmers need to work with, which is soil. And the only real guardian that we have against this phenomenon is an age-old and man-made protective barrier, which are the traditional rubble walls. For those who have not yet seen them in their stay over here, among our friends from abroad, these are walls which are made from assortedly shaped stones, let's say, and which together form a good holding barrier, which is also, I have to say, perhaps not appreciated enough, a very important part of our biodiversity, because there it creates a microcosm for different species, and you find a lot of small lizards, in fact, and people who enjoy the countryside even for this kind of thing. So you realize that in spite of the importance of the structures, the difficult structures that we have, keeping them is quite a bit of a challenge. We talked about the soil. The nature and composition of the soil is also traditionally not very friendly, let's say, to farmers. The problem is, of course, that the oil, the organic matter, is not very intense and often needs to be supplemented, let's say, or strengthened. And the depth is also not sufficient to combat the other aspect of soil erosion, which, as you can see from the pictures, is the let's say, misshaping of the contours that farmers need to actually work upon. As many other member states in the Mediterranean basin, we also have a problem of water scarcity. The question here is the climate, and also the lack of, well, not the lack, but the structure of the island is such that our water comes from groundwater resources mainly, and from water which is created from a reverse osmosis process. Farmers, of course, tend to need to use the first alternative, and through what I was talking about, the man-made interventions, harvesting as much rainwater as possible. This is something that we are all trying to address. The new factor of difficulty that we are facing as we go along is, of course, climate change, which means that we are facing periods of changing conditions, and the adaptation strategies that we need to adopt have to be quite forward-looking and have to anticipate something that is a little difficult to anticipate, because it also brings about, apart from the water, challenges, new conditions such as the spread of disease, which is, of course, also one of the main enemies to farmers' livelihoods. The ambassador also talked about the difficulty of farming. Yes, it's one of the main aspects that you encounter when you have small farming, which is not capable of making use of high automation or economies of scale. And I think that here you're looking at a time-honored tradition, which is the tomato harvest. And you tend to find in certain periods of the year a lot of seasonal work or work that is passed on to family members and which requires quite intense labor. One other aspect that I have to point out, perhaps for the benefit of our friends from abroad as well, Maltese people will be more familiar with this, is that a lot of the discussion on the main issue of the cap reform that we are undergoing, which is the rate of entitlements per hectare, has seen widely disproportionate perceptions. And one of the issues that our friends from the eastern countries have often seen is that because of what they call the historical model in the way that these were created in some of the larger old member states, there is a rather high value of entitlement per hectare. And in some of these other countries, because of the accession conditions, there is a different rate. Malta is perceived to be in the former group, but this is in fact not the case. I will explain later on why this is not the case, but I think that one of the relevant debates about the entitlements, about the reform of Pillar 1, is about the effect that it has on land values. You can see here that I've put on the screen what one of the main challenges for farmers is today, which is that there is a very high competition for land from non-farmers and sometimes, many times, for non-farming purposes. This is something that I just picked for one of the meetings that we had over the past year and a half, and I simply picked at random one newspaper and took two newspapers from the day and took three adverts at random. Most other adverts that you will find will be of this nature. You will find this kind of price, which I think is unparalleled for agricultural land in the EU, at least. And it is something that, of course, farming in Malta needs to contend with in terms of making sure that activities are viable. The other great challenge which is facing Europe and which also faces our country is the aging farming population, where we have difficulties in, Europe has difficulties in attracting young people to farming careers because of the nature, the difficult nature of farming, because of, sometimes people forget this, but there is a cap and there are agricultural policies all over the world, mainly also because farming is a very risky and unstable business. You get climate, you get pest infestations, and the farmer has to take risks, risks which many governments around the world, and of course the EU, think that these risks need to be buttressed through forms of public support. Finding instruments that can really help young farmers set up effectively and find the right conditions to make a viable enterprise that can be rewarding throughout a long period, let's say, of their activity is one of the difficult debates that ministers and the Commission and the Parliament, of course, are facing. Let's talk a bit about Malta and the CAP. As you know, the CAP structure is mainly based, focused around Pillar 1, which has a very large component of direct aid in the EU and a number of market measures which the Commission manages in a manner that it tries to find as much stability on markets and in terms of supply and demand as possible. And Pillar 2, which has traditionally been devoted to finding those horizontal measures, to finding those measures which promote things like objectives like animal health, animal welfare, food safety, environmental preoccupations, and also helping some areas which face natural constraints and disadvantages. Malta's situation, and this is another point that the ambassador made, which is quite important, has always seen a bit of an inversion of the main traditional CAP model, where many of the old countries have very large support in terms of Pillar 1, and a lot of that goes to the larger enterprises, it has to be said. Whereas in Malta, where agriculture plays a fundamentally important role in preserving rural landscapes, the environment, and many of the traditions that define the soul of our communities, we have been relying more strongly on Pillar 2. The transformation which I think Pillar 2 has brought about in agriculture over the past 8 years has been quite astounding. One goes around many farms today and finds a level of automation, a level of technology, which was quite, I think, unthinkable even just 10 years ago. And we are continuing to try to shape more closely those tools in the next CAP reform, in the next CAP period, and in direct consultation with our stakeholders to try to really identify the best opportunities to use those new instruments in a perhaps smarter way. This graph, which I have to credit the Commission with, represents a bit what I was talking about. You can see that Malta is the member state with the highest rate of second pillar funding. That's the blue part of the bar, which also means that Maltese agriculture is where a euro of taxpayer money, of European taxpayer money, gives the most proportionately public goods back to Europe. So I think that it is worthwhile emphasizing this part of our reality in this debate. The figures that we have been using over the present financial period also show this. There is a 5 million euro envelope which will reach its apex next year in view of the phasing in. And of course, EFRD has contributed to a large part of the transformation that we have been talking about. The agricultural beneficiaries, in spite of the fact that a much larger number perform an agricultural activity on a more amateur or part-time basis, are these that you can see, a little over 6,000 people. The single payment scheme has been utilized by about 4,700 farmers. The less favored area payment, which is given to help farmers in view of the natural disadvantages, includes all of those. And there has also been quite a good uptake of agri-environmental measures under Pillar 2. Coming back to the element that I was illustrating, and I have to repeat this because it is, let's say, part of the driving rationale of the current discussion of how to reform the CAP model, is based on this idea of leveling out in Europe the entitlements per hectare that member states get. And the received wisdom that we have had in this debate is that in Malta, since you divide that first pillar envelope among all the beneficiaries, regardless of what type of activity they carry out, you tend to see a very high rate of entitlement per hectare. What we have been arguing, and we are continuing to persuade all our colleagues in Council and in the Commission and in the European Parliament, is that if you look at what actually happens in agriculture in Malta, you find that we have a livestock sector which is landless, which is conducted without matching hectares for grazing. In spite of this, it is quite successful, I have to say, and which, of course, represents an important share of the total envelope. So if one goes to look at how this works out, the actual value of entitlements per hectare is more around 213 euros per hectare, which of course places Malta with those member states which are, let's say, in a relatively closer position to the EU average. If you talk about the actual beneficiaries, considering, as I was saying, that there is quite an important number of smaller farmers in Malta who receive rather small amounts of direct aid, and I have to say there is also quite an important amount of what we call micro farmers, that is to say farmers who farm less than 1 hectare, you find that we have the lowest amount of entitlements of full of the global amount of support under Pillar 1 in the EU, if you take the average for beneficiaries, per beneficiaries. And I think that one of the challenges that we will have in future in using this is to find ways of perhaps focusing better the resources in Pillar 1 on those small farmers and farmers farming more than 2 hectares, and finding ways of supporting smaller farmers, micro farmers, in their environmentally important activities in a better manner through the various instruments at our disposal. The slide that you are seeing now talks a little about, or tries to illustrate, the element which has derailed many of the plans that, of course, not only the Maltese government, but the EU as a whole, has had in implementing the CAP over this period, which is the financial crisis in 2008, which skyrocketed the costs of a number of input factors, including, of course, most importantly, fuel, cereals for animal feed especially, and pesticides and fertilizers, and which has laid proportionately, I dare to say, bigger stress on countries which are more vulnerable in terms of their cost structure than on others in, let's say, a more privileged position in terms of competition and trade. I am saying this because Malta and Finland together are the two countries which, because of insularity in one case and remoteness in another, face the largest challenge in terms of this aspect. There were also, of course, other factors such as the milk crisis, which had a, I have to say, relatively mild effect or even negligible effect in Malta. And unfortunately, the droughts and disease situations, Tuta Absoluta comes to mind because tomatoes for processing is an important strategic sector for the Maltese Islands. And avian influenza, of course, was a very significant threat to the poultry industry in the EU during 2007 and 2008. The last element, the growth of food chain imbalance, is perhaps, it may be a misnomer in terms of that food chain imbalance has probably always been there to some extent. The perception in the member states and with the Commission and the institutions that we need to take more measures to address this and to strengthen local supply chains that have a more direct and fair link, let's say, with producers, is one of, I think, the central strategies that the EU will continue to need to press upon to combat this. So, in synthesis, what do we need to look forward to under the new agricultural policy? Certainly to retain the income levels for farmers in the more strategic sectors in a way that they can continue to deliver these public goods in the Maltese context, and also, of course, to try to increase our ability to strengthen our organizational capacity and our human capacity, which is one of the major challenges that we must overcome and that find success in if we are to actually move in the strategy direction of finding more added value for our fresh products, for our seasonal products, and of course to make sure that the environmental sustainability of these activities becomes, let's say, the flagship, the flag bearer, rather, of the agricultural sector, rather than, as was perhaps more the case in the past, somewhat of a factor of stress between farmers and the European public. These are a couple of links that you can find more information on what I have talked about. And I thank you all very much for the opportunity to make this address.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zahra. We now have some time for discussion on the interesting presentation by Dr. Zahra. I don't like very much the straitjacket situation where one sits down and comments and the floor, you know, it has to wait to present their side. So I hope the speakers that come up here one after the other will get some challenges from the floor. Let's wake up, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, I'd like to say that obviously we fully appreciate the presentation and the way you exposed the great hardship Maltese farmers go through. I must also say, otherwise I won't be faithful to the organization, the farmers I come from, I must also say that we have different views on the way Malta should be negotiating its position, but there are other fora where we can raise these. But anyway, I give the floor now. Can we have some comments from the floor, please, or questions or challenges? Or yes, sir. Can you say your name? And thank you very much.
John, could you hold on a bit? We need, yeah.
I will go say again, my name, John Portelli, and I represent the Malta Organic Agriculture Movement, and I'm also...
You have a better microphone than mine.
Good. It's a good sign. I also represent Malta on the European Federation of Organic, the FOAM. I found Dr. Justin's presentation very interesting and very factual. And I would like to add a few points to what he said. I think one of the biggest challenges we have today, as he said, rightly said, is water. Water where we tend to abuse a bit too much. We have a big scarcity of water on the island because as originally water was used by the agricultural community, today this very scarce resource is being used by everyone. We fill up pools with it, we use it in the industry, we bottle it, and sell it at 300 times the normal price of tap water. And farmers are facing big challenges in finding not only water, but good quality water. As farmers, we all know that once you exceed certain level of salinity, the water cannot be used for irrigation. We have reached a point where these farmers are actually starting to install RO plants, which are expensive to install. We're talking of 15,000 to 25,000 to install an RO plant, and it's very expensive to run. You need a high level of energy, and it generates, obviously, waste, because the byproduct of it is high saline water, and unfortunately, this saline water is pumped back into the aquifer, because most of the farms are not close to the sea, so they can't dispose that water straight into seawater, but it goes back into the aquifer, thus increasing further the problem of water scarcity. Another problem being caused by the agricultural sector this time as well is the high level of nitrates. High level of nitrates both in the soil and the high level of nitrates in the aquifers. So much so that the Water Services Corporation had to close down something like 13 localities from extracting groundwater. Obviously, I don't know the exact figure, but it's substantial. Obviously, we depend on groundwater to mix it with the potable water, and all our potable water, 55% of our potable water comes from energy-intensive processing, desalination process. I think the way forward for this sector is to face realities, and the only way these people can face it is by intensive education. We need to educate the farmers, even if he's got a plot of land. I myself contributed in a 40-hour training course for farmers, but even after 40 hours of training, today I still see farmers spraying their fields without using any protective clothing. So what went wrong? The message wasn't clear enough for these people to realize that the poison they are putting on their fields is also poisoning themselves. Without taking the necessary precautions. Then it makes you think, and you say, why do these people still do these things? They use too much fertilizers, they use chemicals without the necessary precautions, and still go on doing it. So it turns out to a point of enforcement. We need a team of people out there going around these fields, which inspect farmers during the way, like you have factories being visited by health and safety inspectors, we should have farms being inspected by health and safety inspectors as well. And it's something which we are, I think, missing today. Unfortunately, most of the farmers know that some of the things they're doing are illegal or not recommended, and some of them actually do it after 5 o'clock or after 4 o'clock when the authorities are not around. Because government people obviously work till 4:30. Anyway, you have to face these big challenges and start doing something about them, not just simply talk about them. I think this applies also to the rest of Europe. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't quite enjoy your sweeping statements. I would have liked to see more proof in what you said. But anyway, you have a right to your opinion. And I think we should try and stick to the actual theme here rather than going into a local issue which is not really on the cards, because it would take quite some session of time to answer your comments, you know what I mean? But we still appreciate them, though. I think there's Mr. Farrugia who would like to say something.
Joe Farrugia, Taale Producer Group. Yeah. I've heard a lot of noise, I call it, on what was done to farmers. I am a part-time farmer. At my age, I feel it healthy to go on digging some land. Now, what does the farmer see for the future? The farmers see for the future a blank page, full of nothing. Why is that? I do not say it, I feel it. The youths do not want to take up farming because there is no future in it. Unless Malta gets preferential treatment, we will see our farming dead in about 10 years from now. The authorities didn't help. The central farming market is still being operated on in this IT age like it was when my grandfather used to use it. The IT there is only used by the middleman. I encountered a case where a farmer sold a product for 1 kilo, 1 euro a kilo, and the greengrocer bought it for 3 euros a kilo. Those 2 kilos went into the middleman, into the middleman's pocket. When I said this, they told me, why don't you report it? And I answered, I don't want to die young. The system there is still run on the same basis it used to be run 100 years ago. The audit trail does not exist. Now, on the paying agency system, which helps farmers, this agency gave the farmers a plan photographed from the air of their land, which is absolutely accurate. However, 2 years after they were given the grant, according to the area of land, the paying agency turned itself upside down into a recouping agency and charged them for money it gave them. They took it back because there was a part which they got paid for. Unless the system is changed for the future, instead of the 10 years I predicted that farming would die, I would lower it to 7. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your wise words. I was impressed when I don't want to die young. How I wish I could say the same thing. Okay, anyway, shall we get the director to answer some of these interventions and then we continue? Do you have a microphone? No. Okay.
Let me start with Mr. Portelli's points first. Water and nitrates, yes, these are two big challenges for the island as a whole. Of course, we are, like I was saying, a place where natural resources are precious. You were right, I think, in saying that we need to be able to really find ways of making sure that farmers have the right access to those natural resources under the right conditions, and to avoid situations where farmers somehow get blamed for a situation which other stakeholders are also participants in. From my part, also including what you were talking about as regards nitrates, yes, I agree with you that education is a very important tool and objective that we need to follow. I'm glad, I think, that I am in the room with at least two organizations, including your own and the one to my left, which has been an active participant in this objective through the Rural Development Plan in terms of the lessons that have been offered to farmers. There are others. We are looking now to also supplement where these organizations have not perhaps found a manner to address more specific topics to make sure that those are covered as well in future. And I also take your point about the need for a team of inspectors to be out and about to check
what I believe are a limited number of illegalities to make sure that these do not impinge on the reputation of the sector as a whole. And I assure you that I have been taking very concrete steps about this, because I set up at the beginning of this year an actual agriculture inspectorate, which has been doing copious work and which will continue to carry out its activities, its varied activities, I have to say, because this is a very broad scenario, broad area that we're talking about in terms of compliance with obligations. But I think that we also take the view, in terms of the way that we carry out this activity, that we are first and foremost a pedagogue, in the sense that we try, where we find that things are not being done, certain practices are not in line with what should be carried out, through, let's say, lack of knowledge perhaps, or lack of awareness, to have, some people would call it a humane approach, but I just say a common sense approach, where we give the opportunity for the farmers to come in line, the opportunity to find professional advice to help them with this, and only to crack down eventually on illegalities which are persistent and which are deliberate or negligent. As regards the points raised by Mr. Farrugia on the issue of youth, I think that when you're talking about young people, you're not talking just about the attractiveness of agriculture as a whole, but also on the factors of access that are facing young people in specific areas. In Malta, we have a specific set of challenges which need to be overcome through policies. How successful we are in doing that will determine how successful we will be in bringing young people over to the sector. To make myself clear, it's not solely dependent on the income that is derived or the revenues that are derived from agriculture. That is only a part of the picture, I think. But there is a lot that can be done. As regards the point that you mentioned on the farmers' market, although this is not something within my remit, but I think I should speak on behalf of my ministry in saying that the reform of this market is something that has been taken forward and is being taken forward in a pilot project by the ministry, specifically to address the concerns on modernity, transparency, and the quality of produce being delivered there. I think that in the fullness of time, there will be concrete results to look forward to under this aspect. And as regards the point that you made on the paying agency having transformed itself into a recovery agency, I think that paying agencies all over the EU are bound under EU rules to pay in an effective manner everything that is due, but also to recover funds where they have not been paid according to the rules. And I think that they do no more and no less than every other paying agency that there is in every other member state in this regard.
Thank you. Okay, so if you allow me, yeah, if you allow me, there are some time constraints which we have to go through. So can we go to the coffee break and then continue with this discussion before we start the second topic? Thank you. We'd also like to hear something from our foreign guests, okay? And then we give the floor again, what do you call it? So is it okay? Shall we go?
Just one word from the Bulgarian ministry.
Okay, yeah, great. Thank you. And how? It's a great pleasure.
Can you just say your name?
And yeah, of course. Hello, my name is Snezhana Blagoeva. I'm coming from the Bulgarian Ministry of Agriculture. I will start with saying that I feel very much at home here, because listening to the farmers' point of view, I see relevant, if not the same, to similar problems as we have in Bulgaria. And also, We have obviously very common views for the future of the common agricultural policy with the Ministry of Agriculture of Malta, as we have similar priorities for the future CAP. I will make a few comments related to the previous speakers. I will start with the problem with nitrates and water scarcity. We have the problem, a similar problem in Bulgaria, although we don't have this huge problem of not having enough water. We have huge problem with the infrastructure for irrigation, so that our producer, mainly fruit and vegetable producer, could irrigate the land so that they can be competitive at the market. And also they have the huge problem for having getting enough price for their production. So that's why we have it as a priority for the future common agricultural policy to strengthen their position in the food chain. And we are discussing this in Brussels within the discussions for the new common agricultural policy. And I think that there is common understanding in all over the Europe that the position at the market of farmers should be improved a lot, because this problem is common for all member states. As far as the young people and small farmers, we have the same problem in Bulgaria with the low possibilities to encourage young people to join agriculture. Agriculture is not the most prestigious profession in Bulgaria, although in the last year, I think, encouraged by the European financing for the sector, it starts to get more and more attractive for people. But still, I think that like IT sector or some other sectors looks much more attractive for young people. So we still have to work a lot to encourage young people to get in the sector so that they can produce our food. And the small farmers, we have a lot, really, we have a lot of small farmers in Bulgaria. We have big farmers because we have more land, and we have good environment for production, grain production of big farms, but we have, most of our own farms are small farms. And we have very specific problem which can be related to the problems here in Malta. We have a special region in Bulgaria where we have like 40,000 tobacco producers producing oriental type of tobacco on very small pieces of land, which is not suitable for other type of production because of the soil quality. And these people are addicted to production of tobacco because of the environment and because of the tradition. And it's very difficult for them to incorporate it in the common agricultural policy because of the small plots and they cannot get in the support system. So that's why we fully support your wishes for more adaptive common agricultural policy, more flexible, so that we can chain in a better way the subsidies, the support, the European support to these sectors and farmers which are more volatile to the whole economic situation. I think about the paying agency. We have the same problem with the paying agency. Our farmers are saying, are this paying agency there to pay money or to get back their money and to sanction people, farmers, and to make them problems where they checked it on the spot? And I always explain to our farmers, the paying agency is a Bulgarian institution, but they are checked by the European Commission. I don't know if you have ever chance to go to an audit with the European auditors. It's even worse. So they are really binded by the European rules, and if they don't follow the rules, then the money will be stopped. So I think on national level, it's much better to follow strictly the rule and to farmers to learn how to follow the European rules so that we can get the European subsidy and the farmers can get their money. Thank you.